Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Got each other on our side, plus all the folks at Fried, the Burnout Podcast with Kate Donovan.
You deserve more than feeling constantly fried to a crisp. Welcome to Fried, the Burnout Podcast, where you get the understanding, the community, and the information you need to end burnout for good. I'm your host, Kate Donovan, and all of my work focuses on hashtag ending burnout culture. Outside the pod, you'll find me on stages at conferences giving keynotes, in offices providing corporate trainings, doing virtual VIP one-on-one work, or supporting our group program, Unfried, that is run by my right-hand woman, Sarah Vosen. Both Sarah and I have been through burnout and came out stronger, happier, and more fulfilled, and we want that post-burnout growth for you, too. Fried fam, today I get the absolute pleasure and honor of introducing you to someone who probably should have been on the podcast more than a year ago because he has answers to questions that many of you ask pretty frequently, and I've known him now for a couple of years, so it should have entered my brain. But for some reason, we are doing it now. We're getting here now. Today, we get to talk to John Narrell, who is an executive and career transition coach helping mid-career professionals who feel stuck, undervalued, and underutilized find a job they love or love the job they have. He is a spouse, rescue cat dad, avid game show enthusiast, professional bowler, the host of the Mid-Career GPS podcast, and my personal friend. John,
yes.
Welcome to the show.
Hello, my friend. It is so good to spend some time with you today. I'm looking forward to our chat.
We're so lucky to have you. One of the things I recently, by the time this episode comes out, but I did poll my audience and say, what kind of things do you need to hear? What's going on in your mind? What am I not helping you do? And there were quite a few requests for, I took some time off for my burnout recovery, and now I'm looking for jobs again, and I don't know what to tell people. I don't know what to say. Should I talk about it? Should I not talk about it? Am I asking for accommodations? Am I not? Like, what is going on? So I want to just start by, we're going to imagine today that we have someone with us who is starting to dip their toe back into work, and they've got to figure out how to present themselves, if a company's good for them, and all of that. So let's pretend, can we give them a name? I didn't plan this beforehand, but now that I'm on a roll right now.
Bettina.
Bettina. I'm here for,
are you? My go-to name whenever I need.
I love it. All right, so Bettina is like, listen, John, I was burnt out. I had to leave my job. I'm feeling a little bit better, but I'm not perfect. What am I telling these people when I meet them? Am I telling them anything?
Well, Kate, the first thing is, and we'll just reinforce a message you say over and over and over again. There's no shame in burnout. Burnout's not your fault. And when we think about telling that story, whether we're networking or interviewing, it's the first point that I want to drive home. There's no shame here. This is another page in your book. It's another chapter in your story. And how you take command of the narrative is what's going to see you through when you begin determining what parts, if any, of the story you want to tell. So there is a lot of research that's out there about whether you should say or not say and everything. And I always coach my clients on this. You will figure out what part of your story you want to tell because of the comfort level you have in owning your story and what you are looking for when you are interviewing a company that may potentially want to hire you.
So we're going to jump on those words quickly. because I know you said them intentionally, and I don't know if everyone caught them. When you are interviewing a company that could potentially hire you, talk about that a little bit.
There is a dynamic at play, because when you start looking for jobs, and this is especially true at mid-career, you start getting more selective about the kind of work you want to do and where you want to do it. And so what I'll offer the listeners today is that it's a 51-49% relationship here. The only reason why the organization gets 51% is that they have the hiring authority to make a selection. And so they'll get that extra 1%. But if you don't show up for that interview, recognizing that you need to be interviewing them about four F's that I coach my clients on, which is fit, function, finance, and forward. And we can talk about those four F's, fit, function, finance, and forward. If you are not taking the time to intentionally interview them about those things that you know clearly, you are missing a golden opportunity to figure out what's next for you in your career and where you get to do your best work.
Now, this is something that I've heard, not in these four F's, but I have heard people talk about this before. Like, you are also interviewing the company, but that's not what we grew up with, especially as mid-career professionals, right? That's, we didn't grow up with this idea. So it's hard for us to sometimes wrap our heads around this. Because even when you say something, you say, oh, I have an interview, like they've granted me this opportunity to show up and sort of prove myself to them, is the typical, I feel, and you can correct this, is the typical energy that interviews come with. So the first thing that I think you're saying here is, A, you have to decide how much you own your story. You have to control your narrative. And B, before you even get to that part, before you even decide about that, you have to decide if they're even worth knowing any part of it. So the first question isn't, how much of my story should I tell? The first question is this place even worthy of me?
Correct. Yeah, you have to have those filters in place that really discern, this is the company that I want to learn more about. Because especially for mid-career professionals, and there was a study by HubSpot last year that said, on average, from start to finish, it takes a mid-career professional 5 months to land a new job. Now, it could be as quick as 8 weeks. It could be as long as 8 months. And there are different circumstances and factors that come into play, such as industry, market structure, but also how selective you are in that process. A job seeker who is currently unemployed or not working with getting paid income on a regular basis, their timeline or runway might be a little shorter than somebody who is working in an organization that knows they need to get out, and they're going to be a little bit more selective in that process. But yeah, the dynamics changed. You know, we grew up thinking like, oh my gosh, they're going to bless me with an interview and I have to be good and I can't offend them and I can't upset. We don't want to offend anyway, but like, I can't upset them. If I ask this question, what are they going to think? Some of the best compliments, Kate, when I was interviewing for jobs that I ever got was when somebody on the interview panel would look at somebody and go, I feel like I'm the one being interviewed. And I would go, well, you are.
Yeah.
Because we need to make sure this fits. And if this doesn't fit for both of us, we move on.
Yeah. And understanding it from that perspective also helps to assuage any issues around rejection sensitivity. Like, there's a huge neurodivergent component in burnout. A lot of people have ADHD. A lot of people are on the spectrum. A lot of people have a different neurological abilities, and wonderful and special and magical neurological abilities. And there's a tendency sometimes in that population, especially the ADHD population, to have something that's called rejection sensitivity dysphoria, where you are so sensitive to rejection that you don't put yourself out there. But this isn't about rejection. This is about fit. This is about chemistry.
Exactly. And if the organization doesn't feel like it is the place where you can be safe, you can grow, thrive, do incredible work, advance your career, meet amazing people, and give you that sense that for the most part, every day you wake up excited to go to work. It's not completely euphoric where you're like, hey, this is great. I get to go to work every day. You're going to have some bad days too along the way. If it doesn't fit in that way, that is an opportunity for anybody to take a step back and question what's missing. And most importantly, what do I need from my organization? It's not so much what we want. It really is about what do I need in order to find that best fit that is going to absolutely make me feel safe and valued and ready to go to work every single day.
This is making me want to sing a song from my childhood, which is extremely inappropriate. If it don't fit, don't force it. Just relax and let it go. I just keep singing that in my head, which is so silly. All right. So it seems like we're in the fit section. If people are going to be assessing fit, what kind of questions? I know you just gave a couple of them, you know, but what kind of questions are they presenting during the interview process to assess for fit?
So the first thing is getting really clear about what's important for you. For example, if you are somebody who really appreciates consistent feedback from your supervisor, one of the things you want to be asking about is what does feedback look like in this organization? And when the organization responds and says, we believe in open and transparent communication, that is your point to go deeper. And this is the part where many job seekers get a little hesitant because they're like, oh, I don't know if I can really push it here. If you're going to assess fit, you got to go deeper. Tell me what that looks like. I'm curious. Tell me more about that. Can you give me an example? When you start opening that dialogue, eventually things will start to come out that you can then either ask in the moment, or you can consciously choose to bank that information depending on where you are in the interview process. Let's say if it's a first level interview, you may bank it and go, gee, now that I'm in the second round interview, I want to learn a little bit more about this. How does the organization lead? What does support look like? If ERGs, employee resource groups, are important for you, which ones are available? How does the organization support that kind of professional development and support? When you're clear about what you need in terms of your overall work health and wellness, let those drive the questions. But here's the other thing I want to leave with people. Don't waste a question either. If you can get the information off of the website or through your network, don't waste valuable time in an interview when you're trying to assess fit on a question that you could have gotten somewhere else. Like when I was hiring talent and people would say to me, what's a typical day like here? I would almost kind of like get this visceral reaction like, ugh, like no day is ever the same here. So I can't really answer that. I remember I looked at one candidate one time and I was like, yeah, no question's the same. Don't waste the question. Ask me a different one. And it was like, oh, okay. And they didn't really have another question to ask. When you get that moment in the interview to ask those questions, take advantage of it. Get the information you need.
But do some work ahead of time to see if there's some that you can sort of check off a little bit, at least also, and or bank to a further point where you can dig into it a little deeper.
Absolutely.
I don't know if this is a question that will be answerable, but a lot of people in the burnt out community got here because they haven't met their needs for a long time and don't always know what they are because they are so focused, or I'll speak in I sentences. I was so focused on meeting everyone else's needs that I was neglecting my own and couldn't have even, especially at that point, I couldn't have told you what they were because I didn't know, because I never looked at them because I wasn't paying attention. So if you're in this process and you're like, Well, I'm kind of still tired. I don't really know what's going on. What do I need from an organization? I've never gotten it. I don't even know what it could be. What could it be?
Yeah. And in that kind of situation, what I would offer is to ask questions that are grounded in how do you support your leadership? When you have somebody who's managing a team, how many people are they managing? How many direct reports are they responsible for? What supports are in place for them? And specifically to get to, do you really want me to focus on the team? Or is this like a compliance HR checklist thing that you need me to do and sign off on their performance appraisal? But at the same time, you want me to be clients facing, bringing in revenue, doing all this project work, and my team is a second thought? Because if you get that information, all of a sudden, like the image I get is you're like that rubber band that gets stretched so thin that all of a sudden it's going to snap at some point. That may not be the best fit.
Right. This is also where I recommend often that people have a session or two at least with someone like you. Because if you don't know what your needs are and you're not quite sure and you don't know what to ask about, this is when you use other people that have helped other people like you in this situation multiple times to say, hey, well, what about this? What about that? What about this? So that you can hash something out. Sometimes you're just not going to figure it out by yourself, and that's okay. You might need some help to figure out what those needs are. Because I think that's, especially for the burnt out crowd, I think that that's a huge barrier, really.
So when I gave myself permission to ask these questions when I was interviewing, what I learned was that I got much deeper information than I ever thought I would get. So here were the two questions that I would typically ask somebody who was interviewing me, especially a hiring manager. And I would kind of softball it. And I would say, so tell me three things that you love about working here. And they would spit them off, right? And then I would go, tell me the one thing that absolutely frustrates the heck out of you that when you're commuting home at the end of the day, remember the days we used to commute back and forth all the time?
Yes.
So tell me the one thing that when you're so frustrated at the end of the day, when you're commuting home, you wish you could change. And that answer, if they gave themselves permission to answer it and they answered it, what you felt was as truthful or authentic as possible, that would tap into what their pain points are.
And you'll know whether or not that resonates with you when you hear it.
Correct.
Yeah.
Right. Because what led to somebody's burnout, you can ask some questions that may tap into those particular situations or circumstances or events that you don't want to end up in again, but you want to make sure that the company culture fits accordingly as well.
Yeah. All right, so that's fit. F number two is function.
Function is the day-to-day work that you get to do. Where do you get to add the most value? What are the things that you are excited about doing every single day? Now, in the job posting, you're going to get an idea about what the day-to-day function is going to be like. But let's acknowledge that a job posting today in 2024, is very simply a laundry list of all the problems a company has that wants you to solve. The likelihood that you are going to be tasked with all of them probably isn't true. They're going to ask you to hone in on some specific things. So I always coach my clients on when you're looking at a job posting, you look at the verbs. Look at what the actions are they are expecting you to do and formulate your questions around those. Dig a little deeper into that kind of day-to-day because if, for example, if you're somebody who really needs that independent time to strategize, to create your vision, to move in whatever way you need, being client-facing and people-facing organizationally every single day, not gonna be a good thing for you. So look at the function. But the other thing is, look at where you know you're most valuable. Who do you help? What do you help them do specifically? And where do you get to do that work inside of the organization?
There's a question that's sort of piling around in the back of my head that I've never really considered before, but going in and saying, what kind of value does this particular function bring to the company in your mind? Like, how valuable is this to you? And what, like, this kind of question, I think, could be an interesting way to figure out what they're really asking you to do. Because if they can explain what your value is to the company, what that job's value is to the company, then you can assess whether or not your particular why, your reasons for wanting to be things matches with that. And I think that's an interesting kind of place to look. I like it. All right. Function. Number three is finance.
Oh, we got to talk about money, right? Money's important. Yeah. Money allows
people
us
hate
to
this
take
conversation
of-
though.
They do. They do. Right. Money allows us to take care of our loved ones, our responsibilities, helps us donate to charities, have some fun. My case is buy some more bowling balls, all those kind of good things, right? So I would offer that you need to do your research, leverage your network in terms of what people in your role across various organizations are paid, but also to be really clear about what your non-negotiables are in terms of your finance. When we think about overall compensation, it is an opportunity to be creative. So you may have a particular dollar amount in mind. They may not be able to give you all of that, but that money might be able to be made up in other places: tuition reimbursement, professional development expenses, added vacation time, whatever that may be. But having clarity around where you are monetarily valued is a very strong leverage point going into that negotiation. I'm a firm believer that when you are asked, what do you want to be paid? You give a number and not a range, because when you give a range, they're going to land on the lower side of the range because it's in the company's best interest to get the best talent for as inexpensively as possible. And so you may think like, it's only $5,000. Well, $5,000 in a company that has 1,000 people, that money adds up pretty quickly. You have to be clear in terms of what it is you're worth and where your non-negotiables are in terms of ultimately landing on a compensation package.
Fried fam, I tell you in nearly every episode that step one of your burnout recovery is blood work. And I know that a lot of you avoid it because it's a pain and because your doctor has told you that everything is quote unquote fine. And they refuse to test all the things that you think you need. What if I told you that you could test what you want, when you want, from your home with just a couple of drops of blood? SciFox Health allows you to do just that. You can buy tests as one-offs or join a membership. Either way, you can test and track your results to help you make decisions about your burnout recovery journey. Get 10% off any membership, subscription, or one-time test kit right now. Go to scifoxhealth.com/fried for your discount. That's scifoxhealth.com/fried. What kind of things exist in an overall compensation package that people are not often considering when it comes to what they're getting paid? Like, what are some things that people might be missing because they are afraid of the number? So they're so focused on the financial part of it that they're missing some of those other benefits that you spoke about briefly, but like, can we dig into that a little bit more?
Yeah, absolutely. So if the company is offering any kind of tuition reimbursement, there are ways to negotiate that as well. You know, they may say, look, we'll pay for 6 credits and be like, okay, how can we get 12? And see if there's latitude and flexibility to leverage there. Speaking of flexibility, we see more and more that companies are searching and looking for hybrid working arrangements where they're expecting people to be in the office a certain amount of time. And there are job seekers that are out there like, look, I want 100% remote. You can negotiate that as well. Your best leverage point to get the best offer you want is when they have offered you the job, because then it's game on. You can ask for anything and everything at that point. If you want purple paperclips, ask for it. Like, that's the best time, because they're going to want to give you as much as possible to make you happy when you sign on, right? Asking for additional vacation time. Time is money. So if they can't meet your salary offer, figure out what a week's worth of your salary is, okay? Take your salary, divide it by 2,080, number of hours in a standard working arrangement, multiply that by 40. That's what it's going to cost you. Give me another 5 days of vacation, right? Are there stock options? Are there other options available to you that equate to a dollar amount that more in particular is of value to you, because that's what you want? Everybody's got that thing. It's time, it's money, it's education, whatever that is.
Retirement funding,
absolutely. You know, so ask for it. You know, oftentimes, and I've interviewed some salary negotiators on my podcast and have other people in my network as well. The infrequency of people who find that their job offer is rescinded because they asked for something is so low. And in particular, it often comes from a place where if the company feels like you're being dishonest or you're not showing up from a place of integrity, they could pull at that point, because they're like, and typically the example is like, let's say you ask for 150K and then you come back, you're like, ah, I really want 225. Yeah, they're just going to raise a red flag. Don't do that.
Yeah. But once you have an offer, this is, I think what's important, there's a statement that comes to mind that I've heard many times, is that once you have an offer in hand, that's when the good negotiation begins.
Correct.
Not before you have the offer. Before you have the offer, you are giving us a thing to start with. And then once you have an offer, the negotiation begins. So when you get an offer, that's also the beginning of a conversation that can continue. I was just speaking with someone recently through email. They were trying to get me for this virtual event, and they came back a little bit under my normal fee. And I wrote back and I said, well, here's some other ways that you can boost this to meet my fee, not in financial means, but in other ways. And they came back and they said, well, we can do half of number one and number three, but we can't do number two. And I was like, okay, like, but at least we're getting somewhere. This works for right. You, whether or not this is right now, we're talking a lot about kind of being in a corporate situation or, you know, a place where you'd get hired in that way. But this works in other areas too. Okay, now I know you want to hire me. I know you're trying. I know you're going to try and get me for as cheap as you possibly can most of the time. I work with some people that are like, we just want you. Like, we don't care, that's my favorite. Those are my favorite people to work with, obviously.
Absolutely.
Those are the best. But some people, you know, if it's a nonprofit or if there people are going to ask for things, okay, well, how can we figure this out together so that we can find a place where we're still both satisfied with the solution? So I think that that's an important thing to remember, that getting the offer is not the end of the process. It's the beginning of the negotiation.
Well, and what you just said too was that this is a conversation.
Yeah.
Right? It's a starting point. And so oftentimes we think that, oh gosh, now we're going to talk about money. And now it's like, you know, battle lines are drawn and it's them versus us. And everything. No,
it's not.
Round the edges off. It's a conversation. Yeah. Right? hey, this is what I want. Can we make this up here? What about this? If anything, it's an opportunity for you to get really curious, right? To know what you want, but get really curious and have a dialogue, because how the company negotiates with you at that point is going to also tell you a lot about their culture.
Mm. What kind of things might be red flags in that zone?
I'll give you a very specific and personal example. So I had, I was negotiating a job offer with an organization, and we started talking about a signing bonus, which is another way to, and so the signing bonus was what was going to bring me up to my current salary. I was looking for a lateral, good organization, the whole bit. And I was going back and forth, and we were working these things out. And at one point, the HR representative said to me, I need to be perfectly clear with you. The longer you drag this out, the more it is questioning whether or not we really want to hire you. You need to make a decision. Now, Kate, you know this. I'm from New Jersey. It is part of my charm. Some say it is not part of my charm. In my educational career, I have negotiated multi-million dollar contracts for a local union. This does not scare me. And my response to the HR representative was, great, now that you said that, let's be clear that I'm reevaluating this fit as well. Because the longer you are taking to come back with information, like I shouldn't have to wait a week to get a response back when we're this close, is making me question how much I want to come work for you. What are our next steps?
Yeah.
And that question, what are our next steps, was what prompted an action that they came back and said, okay, look, we're going to give you this, we're not going to give you this. This is our best and final. What's your answer? And I went, yes.
Yeah.
It's a conversation. What it told me, though, was they get to a point where they feel like they have to play hardball. Mm-hmm. And so how comfortable am I in those situations? Because if that's happening with someone they're looking to hire, that's telling me that there might be some contentious meetings. There might be some things regarding client management that we might need to be a little stricter on. Mm-hmm. So do I want to play in that space? I play in that space? Is that a stress or an influencer I want to take on?
Or not.
Or not, right.
And if not, that's okay too.
And that's okay too, yeah.
So we have fit, function, finance. And the last one I can't wait to dig into because I have a feeling it's my favorite. I mean, I love money, but I have a feeling forward. The last F, the fourth F, is my favorite. What does forward mean?
So think of it like you're playing chess. You got to think two moves ahead. So forward is about recognizing that the position you are going to move into or accept is setting you up for the next two positions after. It doesn't mean that you're going to leave that organization necessarily, because there can be plenty of growth opportunities internally. What are the skills, the knowledge, the competencies, the experiences that you're going to get on that job that is going to set you up for adding more value and even greater success for the next two positions after it? Oftentimes, job seekers will look at going for a job as an immediate solution or quick fix of getting them out of a situation they've been in. I work for a toxic employer. I haven't had a job. I just need to accept something and move on. When people aren't thinking about forward, what happens is that this decision becomes very isolative. So, okay, I've checked the box. Now what? I want to eliminate the now what by having them have clarity around, when I move into this role, I can do this, this, or this. And I can add value inside this organization because of what I'm going to learn. And if I can't add value inside the organization, or they don't want me to add that kind of value, there's somebody else out there that can need that. So if I go in at, say, at a managerial level, well, how do I get to senior manager? What does that role particularly look like? And then after senior manager, is it director? Is it VP? Whatever that is, thinking about forward, make sure that the decision you make isn't in the moment. It extends far beyond that. Because when you think about what your career runway is going to look like, more than likely, this isn't the job that's going to retire you.
Well, and here we have a couple of sticky points here for this community in particular. Mm-hmm. The most important one I see being the, I'm not looking to advance. I'm just trying to get a job that's not going to murder me. I'm just trying to get a job where I can continue my burnout recovery and not end up where I was. I'm not thinking about, I don't even care what's going on in 2 years. What do we do there?
That's still forward.
Okay.
I want to offer that is still forward, because that is what moves you forward personally. Right? That kind of survival to say, look, I don't need to get run over on this job again. I need to go in. I need to establish a new baseline, do great, you know, great work as best as I can every single day. And if 2 years from now, as I'm working on my burnout recovery, I have progressed in some way, that's forward. Forward, we get to define what forward is. Normally, we define forward as like, hey, I'm going to go ahead and advance. Forward can just mean survival. You know, I go to work, I come home from work, I'm balanced as best as I can be, whatever that may be. That's also forward.
And I would say for my peeps, Fried Fam, I would tell you that I like this idea that John mentioned about resetting a baseline. My forward is allowing this to be a space where I can continue my recovery and feel good and practice my boundaries and do all of those things, so that in 2 years I can reassess where I am, decide what I want next, but that I don't need to necessarily decide that right now. And it might be that I'm happy in this position until I retire. Maybe that's good for me. Maybe that's enough, but that I don't need to make that decision based on my current energy levels, current capabilities, current capacity. Mm-hmm.
So I have a client who has been organizationally loyal since they graduated college.
Oh, wow.
At the typical age, you would graduate college at 21, 22. Mm. They've been with their entire Now, they've moved several times.
But within the organization?
Within the organization, yes. And going through some work situations and circumstances, one of the things that we worked on in terms of forward was learning how to set ground rules. And that included saying no. Because they were overworked, overwhelmed, burned out, fried. And this whole notion of being like, when do I give myself permission to say no? And this whole idea around, okay, where is the ground rule? Where is the ground rule that when this happens, I say this? And it included a lot of conversations with their management and their leadership to simply say, look, I can't keep doing this. Like, you want me to stay here? I'm willing to stay here. But like, we got to change the game, because I can't be the one who always gets dumped on, or the fire alarm goes off and you need me to step in on this particular project. I need to be able to say no, and I need to know you've got my back on this.
Yeah.
And that's been some really powerful and hard work over the years on their part to be able to say, yeah, no, I don't have the capacity to do this. I'd love to help you. I can't.
Let's just find another way. Yeah. All right.
Yeah,
so we're going to get back to the question that I asked originally that we haven't yet answered. We go into an interview process. Bettina goes in, she's looking for fit, function, finance, and forward, and she's asking the questions and she's digging in. And then the HR representative says, so Bettina, I noticed that you have an 8-month gap between your last position and now. You know that that gap was for your burnout recovery. Bettina knows that that gap was for her burnout recovery. Are we talking about this? Are we saying that? What are we? What's the? And now Bettina's like, oh, shit.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's help Bettina out with that.
Let's help Bettina out with this.
Okay. So the first thing, I'll take a step back on this, is that there is a way to position any kind of career gap or break on a resume or LinkedIn profile that addresses that gap head on. So in this day and age where we are playing with AI and applicant tracking systems who are screening resumes and comparing it to the job posting, keep in mind, if you're getting to an interview, your resume's got to help you clear that applicant tracking system if you're applying online to get looked at by a human being. So any kind of career gap, highlight the things as best as you can that you've done or could professionally explain about the career gap. Family leave, totally fine. I have seen where people have put on, you know, taking care of aging parents, and they have absolutely been burned out, but they have phrased it in a way to say, I took time off because. Now, if there's one other thing of the many, many things that we have learned during the pandemic, is that career gaps and breaks are not as stigmatized or biased as what they were pre-pandemic. We have seen people more and more take care of themselves in ways where they have walked away from jobs for a variety of reasons. I cannot say that it is normalized in some way, but there are people out there that are more empathetic and understanding that career gaps happen. And they just look at it as a, this is part of your career history. So I want to offer that in the sense of, you know your story, you get to choose what and how much of it you choose to tell. If you feel like you're fitting in, it's a good organization, depending on what their makeup is, and you were to say to them, yeah, I had a break on my resume, I had a break in my career history, and I took some time off to take care of me.
How are we writing that in the resume, portion? Yeah. Are we doing like a personal development break? A personal growth break? Like, what are we writing?
Yeah.
I need nitty gritty right now.
Sabbatical, personal development break, family leave, you know, anything like that is, I've seen in numerous cases where it has worked and helped and gotten through those kind of things.
I like the idea of, I like the word sabbatical.
Yeah. The same rules still apply in the sense of, we're never going to disparage a former organization. We're never going to say anything bad about a former employer.
Yeah.
And, you know, years ago when we would say like, oh, why did you leave that organization? Well, it wasn't a great fit. Well, now we need to explain a little bit more exactly as to what that fit looks like. Like, what's the why, right? So a lot of times, as with the people I work with, we'll talk about a values conflict.
Yeah.
And a values conflict in terms of, be it workload or where the mission and vision of the organization was, didn't align with them. They felt pulled to go do something different. They wanted to pursue a new opportunity. So much of this, Kate, is wrapped around how well you tell the story, but it is also in how you say it. You've got to be able to communicate that gap in a way, if you choose to communicate it, to communicate it in a way, it is from a place of confidence, in competence, in assurance. This is what I needed. This is what I did. Here's what I learned. Here's what I gained. Here's why this is of value to you. take that gap and turn it back to, here's why I'm a better leader, a better employer. Here's what it is that I've done. I'm not a huge proponent of going into an interview and dumping everything out on the table and sharing everything. We do have to keep some of our cards close to our vest in that regard. But you want to let them in a way that says, okay, this person's got it.
So I'm going to do, let's go for like real, I'm telling you, I want the nitty gritty. I want people, obviously people are not going to copy and paste what we're saying, but I want like a, Bettina writes down at the top, she writes sabbatical and she writes, you know, like recalibration of like recalibration process for me, you know, something like this. Mm-hmm. And then she's saying, during this time, what did I do? And what did I learn? Because we go through this process where we're like, I just fucking slept. Like all I did was sleep for 8 months. Yeah. So what am I saying? Like, I don't want to go in bullshitting people, but also if I have to have something here, I'm recovering from burnout. Like what? I know I'm putting you on the spot.
No, it's fine. I love this. No, it's good because we're going to help people with this, right? So in that kind of situation, you may not be able to put anything down. If it was, I slept the whole time. I took care of myself and my health. I didn't take a course. I didn't, you know, write. I didn't do it. Like, there's nothing there. So like I said, you don't want to BS, but that is essentially what happened. Right.
Yeah.
And so this is where we would pull in a talented resume writer that may then decide to write more of a technical resume than a chronological resume. Mm-hmm. So the career gap is not necessarily called out in that regard. But you know, there's somebody whom I recently finished up working with that had a 5-year career gap for taking care of their family. And issues on both ends of the spectrum in terms of, you know, family members and such, right? And I remember during the coaching session, I said to them, and I'm like, what did you learn? And they were like, I all of a sudden quickly learned how to juggle multiple doctor's appointments for 3 different people and got everybody where they needed to be. And my kids got picked up from school. And I'm like, well, heck, you're superwoman right now. Like, that's awesome. What did you learn? And they were like, I learned how to manage my time. Okay. Mm. Why is that of value? How does that help you in your new role? Why does a company want to know that? That's the part where, you know, like on a resume, right? And you're like, oh, career gap to take care of various family members. And I think you could just leave it as like, I just took time off to take care of my family, period. People will get that, you know? If you need to highlight specific skills, you know, I manage time, I manage projects, I manage this, whatever that is, like that's possible. And that can certainly be done. But more importantly, that's part of the story, right? If you've got a career gap on your resume and you go into that interview, right? And you're going to talk about what happened. I want to offer that it's really more about, what did you learn and why is that of value to the organization? And if you learned, if the only thing, and this is a huge one, if the only thing you learned was how to take better care of yourself, that is tremendous value to an organization because a hiring manager is going to have some type of perceived objection about hiring you. If they think, you're not going to be here that long. You're a flight risk. You know, are you going to end up in the same situation again? Whatever they're thinking, it is your job as the candidate to help them overcome the objections by saying like, look, here's where I'm so much better now. here's what I've learned. Here's where I can help anybody in this organization, because I know these warning signs and we're not going to get people in that same spot.
And I think there's some of the things that I'm thinking about that people talk about that they learn, as time management is one of them. Boundaries are another. Like, I learned how to set boundaries in a way that provides win-wins for myself and for the people around me. I realigned with my values, which means that I know why I'm going for this job and why this job would be important to me. I think this is a really, like, the values piece, I think, is really important to be able to say, listen, I was not on the right career path and I took some time and I figured out what it was I wanted and how I can best serve a company, how I can best provide value. And these are the things that I learned about that. This is how I want to show up in a company. These are the skills that I want to take with me that I had before. These are the things that I would like to implement moving forward. I think that that's something that everyone that's gone through a burnout recovery process can share, because that's something that everybody goes through. Yep. That, like, this is where my life was before. These are the skills I want to take with me from that place. And this is how those skills were enhanced by my time off.
Absolutely.
I like it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And again, right, like we talked about at the start of the episode, there's no shame here. There's no shame in this,
so
right?
Don't carry it in there with you.
Correct. Yeah. Let it be an asset and something you can leverage in that conversation that makes you even more valuable.
Folks, that was a mic drop moment from John Narrow, our friend over at the Mid-Career GPS podcast and also the Mid-Career GPS book. Both of those things you can find at your website, correct?
Yes, absolutely.
Let me make sure I have it right. JohnNarrow.com.
JohnNarrow.com.
Super easy. That will be in the show notes. You can find John also on LinkedIn. He's the best. And I think that what you need to take away with you today, if you are in a position where you are getting back to work, you're looking for something, is here are the highlights that you need to remember. Number one, you are also interviewing the company. Number two, you have learned valuable things during your burnout recovery that will help you be a more valuable employee in the future. Figure out exactly what those things are for you in your story, Bettina, because it's different for everybody. Number three, getting an offer is your negotiation start point. Don't be afraid to look for creative ways to get your needs met. Extra vacation days, like, here for it. And number four, give yourself permission to view your burnout recovery story as empowering and as powerful and as an accomplishment, not as a weakness or shameful or judgmental or any of those things. Give yourself permission to recognize that being able to come through this type of process and come out on the other side strong adds to your ability to be an employee better. You will be an asset to a company because you recovered from burnout. Fried fam, thank you so much for being here. John, thank you so much for being here.
Kate, thank you so much. Thanks for the work you do.
All right, Fried Fam. Be good to yourselves. See you next time.
Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Got each other on our side, plus all the folks at Fried, the Burnout Podcast with Kate Donovan.